Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk again about the Kingdom of God. And all my buttons are working really slow, but I guess we're off and running. This morning we talked about the fall of the United States, fall of the U.S. Empire, because someone in Canada had put up a meme that was traveling around the internet, someone by the name of Paul Hacker. And, you know, I thought it was interesting, and I didn't know really what I should do about it. So I created a whole page called fall@preparingyou.com. You can see the page there and has the meme up. And so I thought we'd go through that. We did this morning for about 2 hours, but we're going to go through it really quick so that we can get on to the solution to the problem that Paul thinks he is seeing. Now, Paul was saying basically that here in Canada, many of us believe that we are witnessing the fall of the U.S. Empire. The problem with Paul's observation, it is probably correct, but for all the wrong reasons. And he seems to be, by his meme, actually promoting that which caused the fall of many nations over the centuries, the fall of Rome. And I mentioned Edward Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. I mentioned Polybius, who predicted 100 years before Christ and several hundred years before the complete fall of Rome, that Rome was going to collapse. And, of course, Polybius was predicting this even before the rise of the first emperor, because there was a natural tendency in this wrong direction. And the reason I love Polybius' quote, which I refer to on the page, and we may even cover it again here in this show, but it is so to the point and so accurate. And Polybius was the historian of historians. He knew history. He wrote about history. He lived history. And he could see the fall of Rome coming. And so he warned in just a few sentences exactly the essential elements necessary for the destruction of an entire nation and an entire empire. Because when Rome was growing pretty rapidly at the time of Polybius, he was there at the fall of Carthage and knew many of the great leaders that were fighting against, you know, the pirates of the Mediterranean. And still, you know, I pointed out thousands of years later, Thomas Jefferson was dealing with the same pirates. And then later on, we would see the President of the United States in our own time going after the Libyan pirates again. And actually today, we're still having trouble with the same pirate mentality, pirate spirit, except now it's actually, it's like Hannibal's invasion of Europe, and Europe is in its decline. We're watching it. We're observing it. They're predicting it, and I mentioned the fact that I saw the YouTube. I shared it at Brother Gregory on Facebook. I have a Brother Gregory Facebook. We have a His Holy Church Facebook, and of course, we have the network. You can go to Preparing You or HisHolyChurch.org and join the network. And that's the best way because we can get messages out to you rather rapidly. But the network is more than that. It's the opportunity to organize yourselves in the way the first century church organized, which was absolutely essential for the fall of Rome, as surviving the fall of Rome. Because Christians not only survived, but they thrived during the fall of Rome in spite of the persecution by Rome. And of course, that persecution by Rome was because Christianity was a competition to Rome. It was a competition to the World Bank of its day, the world order of its day. And they were actually accused of robbing the World Bank. We just did finish a couple of shows on that. And we have lots of pages up, lots of explanations of history that the Christians were accused of robbing the temple at Ephesus. And the temple at Ephesus was a World Bank. And people who aren't familiar with the history of the world, of mankind, would say, what? He thinks that crazy Brother Gregory thinks that Ephesus was a World Bank. Well, it was. And many of the temples operated like banks and financed everything from gold mining projects, harbors, and wars, as well as the minting of coins, the storage of birth certificates, the distribution of welfare. All this was done through the temples because the temples were government buildings. We just call them temples. They didn't go there, you know, and just burn incense to the gods and full of superstition. They were actually, Romans are extremely practical. And if you don't believe these things, you can go to Preparing You. And even hisholychurch.org has a great deal on that. And it explains what the temples were and what they were doing. And we have free books online that you can read online, print out in PDF, so that you can find out. And if you don't, we just had somebody on some church groups that were, you know, we're a terrible cult. We don't fit any of the criteria of a cult. And we have a webpage up on cults, so you can see, and you can go right to the experts on cults, and we don't fit. They think that we're false Christians or preaching a gospel other than Jesus Christ. And when you ask them, what do you think we're preaching that's different than Jesus Christ? They can't say. You know, they just know that we got to be wrong because, you know what we are? We're preaching something different than what they want to believe. But we have the facts. We have the information. We lay it all out so you can see it. And this Paul Hacker in Canada is under the same kind of delusion that many of these people are under because they don't know history. They think that the U.S. is falling because they're not doing enough of what is actually bringing down the United States. That's actually his position. And so we went through it, whole hour on it. We're not going to do a whole hour now, but I mean, basically, he was talking about would a civilized country limit health care and food assistance for the poor. And America does not do that. America does not put any limitations on health care or food assistance or any kind of charity for the poor. There is no U.S. law that is forbidding that. There are a few, you know, if you're handing out food on the street to poor people, they're going to maybe make you get a food handler's license and things like that because they don't know you might be poisoning them. I mean, that has happened in the past where people have actually gone around and poisoned the poor. I hate to even mention it because some crazy person might actually do it. And their licenses probably are pretty ineffectual at making sure that nobody's poisoned or receive, you know, bad foods or anything like that. But the reason they supposedly do it, the same reason they make you have safety belts, is because, generally speaking, if you're a citizen of the United States or of Australia or of Canada and you get injured or injure yourself because of some stupid thing that you're doing, the government has to pay for it. So they don't want you to injure yourself because they don't want to have to pay for it. So, but my point is that if we're Christians, the way in which you provide health care and food assistance and clothing assistance is to do it the way Christ said, through free will offerings. Do it the way John the Baptist said, through free will offerings. Do it the way Polybius said, and Plutarch, and all sorts of philosophers, historians, religionists said, you do it through charity. The government doesn't do it through charity. The government does it through force. And Christ specifically said in instructions to his church, we were not to do it that way. Peter said they weren't to do it that way. Said that it would curse your children and bring you into bondage and make you merchandise. And Paul said you don't do it that way because you don't covet your neighbor's goods. You do it through the perfect law of liberty. You do it through what James calls pure religion. You do it what the parables of Jesus said to do is to take care of one another through faith, hope, and charity and love. That's the way you're supposed to do it. But somehow Paul Hacker thinks that because we don't do it through statutory taxation and redistribution of wealth in a socialist state, that somehow or other that we're not being Christians. But Christians, that's what they got in trouble for. That was the conflict between Christians and the Romans. The Romans eventually, under Saturninus, outlawed private religion. Now, there were a lot of Romans around who were jealous of Christians and didn't like Christians, thought they were idiotes because they were non-participators in their system of social welfare, their system of free bread. But all historians will agree that the free bread of Rome and even the health care that was offered by Rome under Nerva and other emperors led to the downfall of Rome, weakened the people, as predicted by Polybius hundreds of years before. But Paul doesn't seem to know history, so he doesn't know that. He thinks that we're actually falling because we're not being like him, we're not being a socialist. He talks about destroying the educational system. Actually, before that, he mentions crops rotting in the field. And I can give you all kinds of historical evidence that it was the socialists that had crops rotting in the fields. And that was a huge problem in the Soviet Union, is that people, because they were going to get paid anyway and all this stuff, they didn't get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and work till 9, 10 o'clock at night to get the crop in. They just worked their 8-hour shift, and the crop got in. If it didn't get in, the potatoes rotted in the field. Americans seldom do that. There's no money in that. There's no profit in that. And to tell you the truth, I know lots of farmers and ranchers who don't do it just for profit. They do it because they like to do a good job. They like to accomplish things. They have honor. They have integrity. They're hardworking. I mean, a man I knew who was crippled all his adult life. I never saw him able to stand up straight. He always walked terribly hunched over in lots of pain. That when he did custom haying for us, because we didn't have the equipment, we just had a small field, he would be there at 3:30 in the morning. If that's when he had to be here to put up the hay at the right time, to get the right dew on the hay, he would be here at that time. He would pull himself up on the tractor and do it. Never collected a welfare check. Never collected a disability check. Could have, but couldn't see any point in it. That characteristic in mankind is what made America great. Socialism does not make people great. Socialism weakens people, and that's what Polybius was saying. But anyway, his other thing is that we're destroying the educational system because he thinks public school is what makes Americans smart and intelligent and capable. I mean, where would we be without the public educational system? Well, we'd probably be the greatest nation on earth. I mean, far more than we are today. Because people didn't learn to read and write with the advent of public education. There's almost been no public education when America reaches one of its greatest heights in achievements back in the 1850s. It was unbelievable how prosperous America was compared to the rest of the world. And they did it all, 90% of it, with homeschool, home education, or private schools. You could get a college education in America back in the 1700s if you were flat out, totally broke and had no money. And you had the ability to get the grades. Because it was guaranteed at Harvard and Princeton that if you could keep up the grades, they would pay your tuition. You wouldn't owe any tuition. You wouldn't graduate with debt. They would expect you to become an alumni and help fund the college so that they could do this for other people. And people did it for hundreds of years, or at least 100 years. It's the advent of the idea that the government will loan you money so that you graduate $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in debt that has destroyed the educational system. It's socialism that is destroying the educational system. It's government involvement. It's just when people were doing it themselves and caring for one another, we were going gangbusters. Had one of the highest rates of literacy in the world. It's when we started straying from those principles of Christ those principles of John the Baptist, those principles of Peter and Paul and James and John. That's when we started going downhill. Now, many people think that they're Christians today, and that's one of the things he points out, that people think they pretend to believe in Christianity, which actually should probably pretend to believe in Christ. But Christ warned that many would come in my name, but I know them not. They will say they're doing great things in my name. And that's what we see Paul doing, saying that it's great things when you have welfare and when you have, he even refers to literally abortion as a productive right. Abortion is not productive. It's the end of production. Not only for the woman who was about to have a child, but for all the female and male babies, they're never going to produce. They're all dead. That's not a production right. That's a right to kill the child in your womb. And like I said, I'm not for outlawing abortion because as far as I'm concerned, it's already outlawed. We don't have abortions. We don't do abortions. If somebody is facing an abortion and they don't want to have an abortion, they want to have the child in, come to us. We'll help you have that child. We'll make sure that you're able not only to have that child, but learn what it is to be real family. I mean, all the problems in Europe, the need for the immigrants coming in doing the work is because their birth rate has dropped below a sustainable standard. It's dropped below a sustainable standard because of socialism. It's done this in Germany and Sweden and France and all these countries. Their birth rate is dropping because of socialism. Because you don't need the family. Family is not essential. I mean, you can have it. You kind of like, oh, I have a family over here. But it's not essential for survival because you're not going to depend upon them for your social welfare, your social security, for your social insurance. You're not going to depend upon your community or your church, which we used to do for the welfare of the people. We don't do that anymore. And that breaks down the need for family. We remove the old people. They go to old folks' homes. They get a social security check so they don't have to be with the family. Used to have to, they had to move in with the kids. And the kids would take care of them. That was good. That made family strong. That made family health. It was difficult. Don't have to do that anymore. Government will do it. That's the Corbin of the Pharisees. And if you go read our article on Corbin, that's what they were doing. And it was making the word of God did not affect all the things that he is advocating as leading to the fall of the United States government. Is actually the reverse of what he's saying. It's when we took care of one another through faith, hope, and charity instead of force that we were great. It's when we took care of education through voluntary system, homeschooling, home cooperation, community schools that we paid for by voluntary donations. Even public education, it didn't become prominent. Most kids did not go to public school until around 1910. Then it tipped over the 50% mark, where 51% of the kids were going to public school. Even then, most of the funding for public school was privately donated. People don't know that. Even a brand new, out here in the country, we're way behind the times all the time. Out here, they built a school in a nearby valley because kids were traveling 60 miles over a hundred mile round trip to go to school because the school was so far away. So they finally built a school that was closer to them. The land they built it on was donated by a private individual. People were still doing that. That's just a recent school. But now that's dying out. Now wanting the government to do everything and then complaining about the control that the government asserts over education. Like I said, I talked to a principal. I said this in an earlier show. I talked to a principal. Thinks the modern schools are doing pretty good. You have a pretty good school out here. And I pointed out that the kids graduating from high school today, on almost any high school anywhere in the United States, could not pass an eighth grade test that was given back in the 30s. They couldn't pass the test. They're not smart enough. They don't know enough. The fifth grade math problems were telling people how to calculate volumes and in an actual work project, you know, amounts of cement and sand and gravel to pour a sidewalk. Day one in the math book. That was one of the problems, you know, 60 years ago. Now kids are graduating from high school, can't do it. When my own kids were all home taught, one of them was just telling me today that, you know, when he would have been graduating from high school, only two of the kids in the local classroom, you know, graduating kids in the local graduating class, were able to correctly address an envelope in the mail. Only two of the kids. Everybody thinks the kids are so smart today, yet we're all talking about millennials not knowing anything. Now, many of the kids can learn these things, but they're wasting a huge portion of their life. They don't know history. And that's why, you know, Paul doesn't know history, and which is why he came to these absolute absurd conclusions. Now, some of you listening to this will say, you know, you're right. Now, people don't know that. I mean, you read Edward Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. They tell you that all the things that the United States is doing, Canada is doing, all the socialism you're seeing in Europe, the lowering of the birth rate, the breakdown of the family, the people not getting married, not staying married, not making that commitment to carry the family from start to finish. In the black community, 75% of the kids are being raised in single parent families. Yet, you know, 40 years after slavery, and even during slavery, blacks had a higher percentage of two-parent families than they do today. The percentage was like, depending on where you took it, if you took it in Chicago, it's about 3% of the black families had a single-parent family. 3%. If you did it in the country, it's like 1.5%. Well, a large portion of that percentage was because one of the parents died, not because the fathers abandoned them or that the mothers were having children by different people so that they could get a bigger welfare check. You've created a society that is destroying your society. But the good news is you can turn around and start actually doing what the early church did. And people don't realize that they're not doing what the early church did. They're not doing what Christ said we should do. And when I tell people that, they get angry. They get upset at me. They want to kill the messenger. But the reality is that's just the way you've done it. I can't do anything about it. That is history. That is facts. And I'm not saying it to put you down. I'm saying it so that you have an opportunity to repent, to think a different way. That's what repentance is. Think a different way. Yeah, you know, just 100 years ago, if we lost our job, we got sick, we fell off a ladder, and we couldn't support our family, where'd you go? You went to other members of your family, like you see in the big fat Greek wedding, or you went to church, which is your avenue to the community at large. Your community church would help you out. Churches today, they don't do that. They have a list of telephone numbers of the government, and so you go to the government. But if you go to the government, you're disobeying Christ. Because Christ said, you know, the governments of the Gentiles, the princes of the Gentiles, the rulers of the Gentiles, who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other. It is not to be that way with you. But here today, that's what the churches do. They send you to the benefactors who exercise authority one over the other. The men who force the offerings of the people and redistribute the wealth through force and sometimes through violence. That is totally anti-Christ. That is totally anti-Moses. We can show you that is anti the message of the Bible from start to finish. I even hear Jews who are waking up to this starting to preach it themselves. And that's, you know, I could say it's terrible that a Jew is the best Christian in the room. But I guess that seems to be going full circle, because Jesus was obviously the best Christian in the room. And he was a Jew. All the apostles were Jew. All the early Christians were Jews. Then they started bringing in the Gentiles. But what were they bringing it into? Some superstitious faith? They were bringing it into what they called the way. And that way was a way of charity. So anyway, this morning on the news, they were talking about the United States trying to raise the debt ceiling. And they're not being able to do it because some are objecting to the wall. And we talked a little bit about that. You just have to go listen to those shows. They're all dated and up online. So you just look that up, and it will be posted at Preparing You. And you can get our podcast, Keys of the Kingdom. You can look that up, and it'll tell you all the back shows. But what is the Bible really all about? Is it about religion? Then why does it only mention religion 5 times? In the whole Bible, it mentions religion 5 times. The word shows up 5 times. Now, it talks about the essence of religion many times. But what is the essence of religion? What does religion mean? You know, just 200 years ago, if you looked up definition of religion in a dictionary, it would say the pious performance of your duty to God and your fellow man. Now, if you look it up, it's what you think about God. And that's why people hate us, is because we say, no, religion is more than just what you think about God. It also includes the pious performance of your duty to God and your fellow man, which is why Christ said, it's not those who say, Lord, Lord, but those who doeth the will of the Father. He talks about those who are going to enter into the kingdom have to do the will of the Father. Paul goes on and lists all kinds of people who are doing contrary to what Christ taught, and they have no inheritance in the kingdom. Yet your modern religionists today, all you have to do is think these set thoughts. And then when you think these set thoughts and call them beliefs, you're in. But Jesus said there will be many who think they are following me, but I don't know them. And as a matter of fact, he even says that many of them are actually workers of iniquity. So what is the Bible about? Well, what does it talk about more than religion? It talks about government. And of course, religion is actually kind of a way to govern yourself. So in a way, religion is about government too, but it's not about civil government. It's about moral government, moral way of governing yourself and your relationship with other people round about you. And that's what the Bible is really about, is that relationship with people round about you. And one of the major ways in which you have a relationship with people round about you is the governments you create, which is what civil law is. Civil law is the law which men create for themselves. And Paul, if you've gone to the page, you see that he talks about civilized. Well, civilized is, you know, can be good. Civilized could be bad, because civil law is the law you make for yourself. If you make bad laws for yourself, being civilized could be a bad thing. If you make good laws, well, then civilized could be a good thing. Well, it's not a good law to say, let's take from our neighbor to get what we want. Let's all have one purse. The Bible talks about that. I have a link on the page. What does the Bible mean that the way, you know, let's all have one purse, and we're told to consent not with people who want to do that, which is what socialism is. A common purse. Communism is a common purse. He says, don't consent. Consent not, because you're going to be trapped. You're going to become merchandise in the snare that you make for other people for gain. The Bible tells you that. Why does the Bible tell you that? Because the Bible is mostly about government. Yeah, that's right. It mentions government 700 times, religion 5 times. So what's it about? But it isn't about, you know, when I say government, what do you think? What are you thinking when I say the words government? Well, see, that's why repentance is important. You have to think a different way. And you're right. Most of the time when you mean, say, government, you're thinking of somebody who is ruling over somebody else. But that's not really what it means. So, I see we got lots of callers coming on the thing. I don't see anybody wanting to ask a question. I may not take calls anyway, because I want to get through this. But we should probably take a break, and so we'll take a little break and a breather, because this is as good a time as any, and we'll be right back. Yeah, the keys of the kingdom. Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. What are the keys of the kingdom? What you bind on earth is bound in heaven, and what you loose on earth is loose in heaven. What is heaven? Well, it's spiritual aspect of the universe. I would suppose heaven is one of those multi-dimensional realms that physicists like to talk about. Hell is evidently another one of those multi-dimensional realms. Hell is evidently a place of people ruling over other people and beating on other people and poking each other with pitchforks or what have you. At least in the images that some people draw of it. If you read Dante's Inferno, you'll see all kinds of not a good place to go. Heaven is supposed to be a good place to go. Most all that is conjecture, imagination of people. We don't have any real proof of any of that. It's just what people feel and think and see. And some people, you know, they have near-death experiences and come back and say what they saw and everything. And I don't know what they're seeing. I believe there are multiple dimensions in the universe. I believe that some you might refer to as heaven and some you might refer to as hell. Jesus says there are many mansions, so maybe just categorizing things heaven and hell is like categorizing them left or right. Sinner. Personally, I don't like the terms left or right, especially to do with politics, because most of the people on the right are pretty left of me, but the reality is we live on a round planet. If you go far enough to the left, you'll find yourself on the right, which is why you're finding the far left acting like fascists. You know, while they say they're going to punch the fascists, they're actually acting more like the brown shirts than the fascists. And of course, you know, to their own doom and demise, because it's all part of that self-destructive spirit that we talked about, which you can hear about on our troll page. And it's what you see all the time in people. But if we go back to 1384, one of the first translations of the Bible into English was done by a fellow named Wycliffe, who was pretty much excommunicated. He was actually burned at the stake, but if the way in which someone is burned at the stake, if I'm ever going to be burned at the stake, I want to be burned at the stake like Wycliffe. Because what they did was they actually dug his body up 2 years after he was dead and burned it at the stake. So, because he was still somewhat popular when he was alive with some people. He was hated by others. But if you're going to get burned at the stake, that's the way to go. Is let them dig me up and burn my bones at the stake. But anyway, so he was controversial to say the least. Because he did this terrible, terrible thing of translating the Bible into English, or at least part of it. And Tyndale had done the same thing, and they ended up, you know, he got burned alive after they cut out his tongue and everything else. And it was interesting that the very government that, you know, kind of put the hit contract out on him was the one that asked him to translate it into English. But then when they found out what he was writing down, they got really upset, and they wanted to stop it. And the amazing thing is some of his translation was not as strong as I would have made it, you know, knowing the Greek that I know. And I probably would have made it a lot stronger. But the problem is I use the King James all the time. And the people who translated the King James said they did the best they could under the circumstances. And one of the circumstances was they were working for a king who kings held that office previously had people like Tyndale tongue cut out and burned at the stake. So, you know, what could they do? And the fact is they also had to succumb to the authoritarian church who still to this day, the Roman Catholic Church claims to have not burned anybody at the stake. But yet somehow they were there, and the Protestants burned people at the stake and hung women. And so there was always this persecution. I don't want to put all these people into the same category. There's lots of different kinds of Catholics, lots of different kinds of Protestants, lots of different kinds of Indians, lots of different kinds of black people, lots of different kinds of all kinds of people. And so I want to take people on a case by case basis. If you're doing wrong, let's take a look at that. And, but in the foreword to his Bible, it says, this book, that's what Bible means, book, is for the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And I saw somebody, I don't think I can remember his exact words. Oh, Yeah, there's a group that is talking about biblical theology, and they evidently don't like some of my stuff. They haven't really said why, but I notice they seem to have taken down some of my posts on their site, and they seem to have an objection to it, but they're not going to understand biblical theology. You're not even going to understand the metaphysical nature of the universe if you don't start understanding everything about why the biblical authors wrote the things that they wrote. If you're going to skip major instructions in the Bible, like Jesus condemned the Pharisees because they were not attending to the weightier matters. So are you attending to the weightier matters in your church? You know, I'll lay you odds you're not. Because now Jesus tells you what the weightier matters are. Law, judgment, mercy, and faith. Whoa! How do you attend to law? Well, you do that in your governments. You don't do that in your church. If somebody is being unjustly treated, wouldn't everybody in your church want to go down there if they're being unjustly treated, say, like by the courts or the local police? Wouldn't you want to go down there and say, what are you doing? If their neighbor is robbing them, stealing property from them, or being unfair to them, persecuting them in any way, shape, or form, wouldn't you go down there and say, hey, what are you doing? You know, come down with your pitchforks and torches. I don't care. I mean, I don't want you lynching anybody, but why aren't you getting involved? Oh, well, that's the government's job. But the kingdom of God is a government. It's just not like the governments of the Gentiles. Jesus, in the same place where he's telling you not to be like the governments of the Gentiles, who exercise authority one over the other, but call themselves benefactors. In other words, not be like them. He turns to the same men that he's instructing and says, I appoint unto you a government. He says, the kingdom. A kingdom, that means government, basileus. He wasn't appointing them to exercise authority one over the other or to rule over people like they do in the other governments. They weren't going to do all the services of government through force. They were going to do it through charity. Wycliffe understood that this book was for the government of the people, for the people, by the people. And if you go back, and I'm going to do a video on this, at least a short video on it, to try to answer a question for Jordan Peterson. I was going to play that. He asked a question and somebody recorded it, sent it to me, and I actually have it in a USB on the computer right now. But he asked a question thinking, and I know he's kind of figuring this out on his own, but he asked a question about, you know, the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And, you know, folks, there isn't any difference between what the God of the Old Testament was trying to tell you through the prophets, and the God of the New Testament was trying to tell you through Jesus Christ and the apostles. What he was trying to tell you is exactly the same. Your interpretation of the Old Testament is so gone astray that you can't see what they were trying to tell you. And you think that Christ was trying to tell you something different. Now, I know you're not going to accept that. Many of you are not going to accept that when I put out there. But I tell you, this morning, an interesting thing happened. I had to go out after the two-hour program and feed the sheep and the cows because it's middle of the winter and you got to throw them some hay. And it's way out on the desert. And my wife was driving, you know, when I feed off the back of the pickup. And it was really windy. There was a terrible dust storm. You couldn't see across the field. And the dust was coming off the lake bed because it's coming out of the south. And we get these once in a while, and it's alkali dust coming off of what is virtually like the Dead Sea, which is Summer Lake is like the Dead Sea. It's a salt and sea. But it's really dried up because we've had quite a few years of drought. And so when it blew from out of the south, we'll get that dust, that alkali dust comes up here. And you can taste it. You can breathe it in. You can actually feel it breathing into your lungs. So anyway, we thought, well, let's feed the sheep and the cows over this little hill where they'll have protection from the wind. Hay won't blow around. And we've fed them there before, but we haven't done it in a long time. But anyway, so usually I can go over there and honk the horn and the cows and sheep will follow. And we did that, and they didn't come, and then the cows didn't come. The sheep were coming, but then they came from a different direction, and they started going to the cows because the cows just stood there and mooed because they were so used the last month getting fed down in that other open field. They thought, like, what do you mean? Well, I want you to follow the truck because we're going to feed you over here. And they just stood there and look at you, that dumb cow look, and moo at you. Moo. Well, that's how I feel sometimes. I'm telling you about the kingdom and these home churches who are starting to get some things right. And some of the churches, there's always somebody in almost every church that is really close to the kingdom. Even in the Sanhedrin, there were people that were close to the kingdom, and Jesus points that out. That Roman centurion, full of faith. He's a Roman centurion, for gosh sakes. So you don't make the division amongst people that way. There's something else that makes you close to the kingdom. But anyway, those cows were so used to being fed down there, they just stood there and looked at us and mooed. Like, I don't get it. And so I had to, you know, get out of the truck and grab part of a bale and walk over there and throw it down. Some of the cows came, but the sheep kept looking like, what are you doing? And they've done this before. And that, now tomorrow, if I do this, or later in the week, if I do it, they'll have it down. I may have to do it a couple of times. But they had to actually had to walk up to the sheep so that I was within 20 feet of them and then hold the hay out. And then they go, oh, you want us to follow you over there? And and then they started coming. And then I went back to the truck and my wife slowly drove over the hill and over what we call Caleb's Mound now. If Caleb's listening, he'll get it. And then down into this little valley and fed the sheep down there out of the wind. And it's because it was something different. They could not get it. They could not get themselves to move because there was something different. And what, this is not our routine. As a rule, don't we do it down here? Well, they've done it. They've eaten over in the other place before. They knew the way to the other place. But they couldn't go there because they couldn't remember that. And that's where we're at today. That's why I point out 100 years ago, you used to go to church for all this social welfare that you now only go to the government for. And you think that that's what the government is for. And you think that's not what the church is for. But yet, just 100 years ago, that's what the church was for. To help you think the way Christ thought. To act the way Christ thought, to govern yourselves according to the ways of Christ, which is what Christianity was called, the way of Christ. Who gets into the kingdom? He goes to this group that doesn't even know they're Christians. Like, this is why I say there's many people that are close to the kingdom, and they may not even know it. They may be going to church, they may not be going to church, but they may be close to the kingdom. So what makes them close to the kingdom? Jesus said, because you fed me when I was hungry. You clothed me when I was naked. You gave me water when I was thirsty. You visited me when I was in jail. And I said, when did we do these things? By the way, visiting people in jail usually meant you were bringing them food because they were not well fed in jail. They could die in jail from exposure and everything else if there wasn't somebody on the outside helping them. It's still that way in jails today, but not because they lack food. It's because they lack drugs. So they want people from outside. They're always bringing in drugs into the jails. I don't know how they get them in there. I know people who work at prisons, and they say it's just amazing, the cleverness to get the drugs in. But the reality is he said, when you did these things to the least of my brethren, you did them also to me. Well, now, everybody thinks, well, then help the poor out. And we talked about this morning about people who are, you know, complaining about Mother Teresa and about, you know, what was the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah in the time of affluence. They did not strengthen the poor. Because you can give charity that weakens people, in which we talked about earlier in the show. Causes a breakdown of the family, which is what Paul wants. He wants to break down the family. He doesn't actually want that. But he doesn't realize what he wants will do that. Because he doesn't know history. Because he probably went to public school. The educational system which is actually eating away at society. But anyway, if you were to start to take care of one another, your eyes would start to open. God would start to hear your prayers. If you come together in the tens, hundreds, and thousands as Christ commanded, you know, you had to tend to the weightier matters. You had to feed my sheep. You had to not forsake the gathering together. These are all things that Christ said. If you're not doing the will of the Father, you're not in. You're not going to make it. You said, oh no, all we have to do is believe. But you don't really believe if you're not doing the will of the Father. Because you tell me you believe. All those people, those many who think they're doing things in Christ's name, they all thought they believed. But they didn't. How do you know who believes? How do you know you believe? What are you doing? By your works, by what you do, we know if you believe or not. Or at least we have a pretty good idea. If you're doing opposite of what Christ said, you're not attending to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. You're coveting your neighbor's goods through the exercising authority of men who rule one over the other. You're cursing your children with debt by wanting them to raise the debt ceiling so that you can get back to work. Or you can get back to government services. All those things are contrary to what Christ said to do. But you want to do those things and tell me that you believe. That's why people like Phil got so mad at us. Because Phil wants to eat at the table of kings. And he has a great appetite for benefits. And he doesn't know that there is another way. And when people start knowing that there is another way and start coming together in the tens, hundreds, and thousands and stop putting themselves and their own passions first, which is a big mistake, then the miracles will come. And the Spirit of Christ will come to them. Yeah, I've already seen it come to those who are willing to walk in that way. But and that's the way you need to govern yourself if you're going to walk according to the ways of Christ, the ways of John the Baptist, the ways of Peter. But if you want to be covetous of one another's goods and ask the government to take away from your neighbors so that you can have more stuff or more security or more health care or more food stamps, instead of come together and do this together. See, the amazing thing is people complain about the rich have so much. And there are actually, when you give them the actual statistics of how much the rich actually do pay far more. You know, if you went to Sweden, you would pay way more taxes as a poor person than you do in the U.S. Why? Because the rich in the U.S. pay way more. Now, there's some liberals who think that we should raise the taxes. You know, the rich say, they have a bunch of rich come on to in front of a camera and say, yeah, we think they should raise the taxes. Goes back to what this Paul was saying. There's no limit on what those people can give in charity. And if they give it in charity, they get to deduct it from their taxes. And then they save money in taxes because they gave, then they can give more if they want. There's no limit on them. There's no reason to make it a law that they have to give more. They just start giving more, but they have to give wisely. Is it Brett or Eric Weinstein? One of those guys who talks with Jordan Peterson and David Rubin was saying that, you know, what we should do is that we should find the most charitable men in our community and fund them in sort of a slush fund. And they would take care of the charity. And if they don't do a good job, we don't fund them. If they do a good job, we fund them more. And we should, well, that's the tens, hundreds, and thousands that Christ said to set up, that Moses did set up. That's what the Levites were. They weren't sitting around blowing smoke all the time. They were actually providing the social welfare. I actually see guys who are supposedly scholars saying, oh no, the tithing wasn't for social welfare. But then I can find you other scholars that say, oh yes, absolutely, the tithing was all about the social welfare of the nation of Israel. So which is it? Well, the fact is it's wishful thinking. And we can take you through it And this is one of the rabbit trails on our series on tithing. And, you know, and this will help you clarify that the government of the people, for the people, and by the people is when the power of the state is in the hands of the people. See, Israel, where was the kings in Israel? There were no kings in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. That works really good if Christ is in your heart. If Christ is not in your heart, that's not going to work real good. If God is in your heart, that's going to work great. If God is not in your heart, you're going to end up going the other way and becoming accustomed to living at the expense of others. And, you know, as Polybius says, and you're going to become savages again and fit for the first tyrant that comes along who will rule over you, which is exactly what happened to Israel, because they would not let God rule over them in their hearts and their minds. They weren't going to do what Weinstein was saying, although he didn't even know he knew what he was saying. He didn't realize that that's what the Bible was about. Is doing exactly, he was just coming to this conclusion because it makes sense. He's not religious. I think he actually even thinks of himself as an atheist. But he's closer to the kingdom of God by what he said than many of the people who claim to believe in God. Isn't that strange? You know, I hardly know the guy. I mean, I've seen him talk. I'm fascinated by what he has to say. And he seems very open to listen to other people. But I'm not trying to get you to follow him. I'm trying to get you to follow Christ. Do what Christ said. Which is what Moses said. Christ and Moses were in agreement. But the Pharisees, who believed they believed in Moses, were not in agreement with Christ. So somebody twisted something somewhere. Sadducees, Pharisees, somebody actually even listed the Essenes. Although I find the Essenes preaching many of the same things that Christ said. I'm sure most of the early Christians had an Essene background. Not all, but I mean many, let's say many of the early Christians had an Essene background. John the Baptist seems to have an Essene background. But I'm sure there were many Essenes who didn't follow Christ. Were stuck in their religious superstitions. I say superstitions because there are two words in the Latin that are translated religion. One is religiare, and the other is superstitio. Both of them have been translated religion. They're different aspects of religion. See, the fact is the definition of religion is not what you think about God. The definition of religion is your pious performance of your duty to God and your fellow man. But your duty to God and your fellow man can be defined by what you think about God. So, but very clearly, the use of the Greek word threskia is about what you do. It's not about what you think. That's not what threskia is about. Even the word faith isn't about what you think. Faith is what is written in you, part of your very soul, your very dynamic of your being, that compels you to do things. And one of the things that compelled Weinstein to do is to say, you know what, we got to do, like this is an original idea, seemed to be with him, is fund somebody who is really good at charity, as if we really cared about each other, and then things would be better. That's exactly what we need to do. Boy, there's a lot of people coming on to the call, or at least I think, oh, I guess there's not that many more than I saw before. But anyway, so we're almost at the end. Join us on the network at preparingyou.com or go to hisholychurch.org and join the network. And we can answer a lot of questions and help you in as many ways as possible. But until then, peace on your house and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97643. 1-800-530-1140. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.